We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Thanks for calling Toyota. This is Jan.
I just adopted a new best friend, and I'm looking for a Toyota so we can make the most out of summer.
With a new RAV4, you can take your pup for a drive up the coast. You can take a Prius to the park, or you can take a Tundra to kayak at a remote lake.
One problem, Jan.
Oh?
My new best friend's a cat.
Your summer starts here, but it all ends June 3rd. Toyota, let's go places. Dealer inventory may vary. See your participating Toyota dealer for details.
Visit your Front Range Toyota stores today. Toyota, let's go places.
Running the option on first down. Hagan has it. He has Rome. He's got one man to beat. Now he pitches to Flanagan, and he may take it all the way. Flanagan's in for the touchdown.
McKinley Wright from the logo.
Oh,
got it! Oh, McKinley Wright.
Breaks a tackle. Touchdown. Touchdown. That's five for Chris Brown.
The defense of Tomlinson.
Welcome into the DNVR Buffs podcast, presented by the American Raptors. I'm Henry Chisholm, and today we've got more news to talk about. Some changes with the running back situation, and I'm not going to lie, it's a bad thing. So yesterday, on Friday, Ramon Jefferson, the running back who was a stud at Maine, went to Sam Houston, was a stud at Sam Houston, All-American there, and committed to Colorado to play his senior year in January. He announced that he was decommitting. So, goodbye to Ramon Jefferson, and hello to a bunch of questions about what this backfield will look like. The kind of corresponding move there was that Colorado decided to bring Anthony Hankerson on campus this fall. So, Anthony Hankerson is a, I think, three-time state champion at St. Thomas Aquinas, the high school in Fort Lauderdale, and one of the very best high school football programs in the country, starting running back, three state championships, some awesome numbers to go along with that. And the plan was for him to grayshirt this season, which means he shows up on campus in January so that he doesn't count against the scholarship limit, and also it doesn't count as a year of eligibility this season. And like I said, plan has shifted, as reported by Justin Guerrero, I should say. The plan has shifted, though, and Anthony Hankerson is going to be a part of this running backs room. There's a chance that there's another addition still. They still do have one scholarship open, but I'd be pretty surprised if they add another running back, just considering they have other needs, you know? You know, you'd expect maybe another defensive back would probably make some sense. I really do think that's probably where they go. Who knows? Maybe they add in the trenches. We'll see. Maybe they do add another running back. As of now, though, there are five scholarship running backs on the roster as well as a couple of walk-ons, notably Charlie Offerdahl, who had a couple of touchdowns in that spring game, played really well, just like he did in last year's spring game. He's a redshirt freshman. Hey, he now has a chance. He now has a chance. You know, there's... I spent a little bit of time last night thinking about it. If Charlie Offerdahl turns out to be like a movie story type deal, this is the path, right? Like, you blow up in the spring game when you enroll early as a walk-on. You blow up in the spring game again as a redshirt freshman. The offensive player of the year in the conference transfers out. They get an awesome replacement, who we'll talk a little bit more about in a second. And he decides to decommit. And he decommits so late that the Buffs don't really have the chance to add another just experienced, proven running back. The door is open. The door is open. And maybe that's the world we're living in. Maybe it's Victor Venn. Maybe it's Hankerson. We'll dig into all of that today. That's the plan. But I do want to start by talking about the two running backs in the news yesterday, and then the potential for a transfer, and then we'll kind of get down into like how will these carries be split this season. And that'll be kind of the second half of the show, and we'll dig into some of these other guys. Starting with Ramon Jefferson, who is no longer planning on attending CU. I'll say that when I heard the news, I was, first of all, very surprised. And then pretty quickly afterward, I found myself watching some highlights of Ramon Jefferson. It's a shame they're losing him. It's a real shame they're losing him. You know, there's the rumors going around that he got the Tennessee offer. I'm not sure that we know that for sure. Again, whenever there's an SEC team that swoops in and picks a guy up like this, if that's what happens here, every time you think about the NIL deals, you think about the money and wonder, like, is that what happened? Is that what happened? But regardless, again, I mean, the fact that Tennessee wants him for one season means that he's a pretty solid back, right? You know, going back and watching, it's just crazy how many tackles he breaks. And again, they're FCS players, but, I mean, some of that has to translate. You know, is he breaking four tackles on plays in the Pac-12? Probably not. But is he breaking one or two? There's a real chance. I think that he would have been a really good fit for what Colorado needs right now, which is a guy who can break tackles. You know, if the blocking is not up to par on a given play, he's a guy who can take advantage and still turn that into a productive play. And there's a chance that there's going to be some plays where the blocking is not up to par. You know, going from 0 to 100 from last year to this year in terms of that offensive line, it's unlikely. It's unlikely. So, you know, Ramon Jefferson, and he has the home run hitting ability. He has the tackle breaking ability. I mean, there's a reason he was an All-American. There's a reason he carried his team to an FCS national championship, made it to the semifinal this year. That was a really good football player. I think there was a real chance that, I mean, it would have been a battle between him and Alex Fontenot for the starting job. I would have had my money on Jefferson winning the job. And I think that whoever wins that job probably winds up being the offensive MVP this season, you know, just because you expect the passing game to be at the point where, first of all, the quarterback can be the MVP, or also that the quarterback can put a receiver in position to be the offensive MVP. And so I just think the easy bet is whoever the starting running back is, good chance offensive MVP this year. And I think there was a good chance that was going to be Ramon Jefferson. It is a really big loss in my mind. It is a really big loss in my mind. And we'll get into replacements later. And I mean, to hint at this now, I mean, it's a really big loss, but if one of those four guys turns out to be a good football player, there you go. You know, it's not like he can't be replaced. It's just that you're banking on Deion Smith or Jaylee Stacks or one of these freshmen to really step up and punch above their weight, you know, take a step forward if you're Jaylee or Deion, or just be ready to go at a young age if you're one of those freshmen. Speaking of the freshman, as I mentioned before, Anthony Hankerson is coming to Colorado. 0.86 something recruit, according to the 24/7 sports composite. I think he could have been graded out a little bit higher, honestly, and going back and watching him. I think there's a lot of factors that play into all of this, obviously, but even just coming out of St. Thomas Aquinas High School, the expectations are high. I mean, what was it? They've had 30 guys they put in the NFL since the turn of the century, the most of any high school in the country by a wide margin. You bet on the guys from that high school. That's just the way that it works. And going to that high school doesn't necessarily mean you're going to be a good football player. But combine that with the production he had as a three-year starter at running back, winning multiple state championships, three state championships while he was there, there's a lot to like just on that surface level, you know? Just on that surface level of looking at the numbers, look what he's come from, look at the fact that, you know, Geno Atkins and LaMarcus Joyner and Giovanni Bernard have all come out of that high school recently, you know? So, surface level, again, the upside's obvious. The upside's obvious. When you dig into the tape, there's plenty to like there as well. He's 5'9", 190, so not a big back by any means. Again, he's a freshman. You expect him to get up to 5'9", 200, 205 at his peak. Who knows? Maybe he's somebody who wants to be 215. Maybe he's somebody who wants to be 195. We'll see how that all plays out. And the reason it's kind of tough to project is because he's a really well-rounded runner. You know, he's fast. He's not like Tyreek Hill, like, oh boy, here's somebody that you really got to, you know, but he is fast. He's a fast running back. He seems to have good vision, at least solid vision. You'll see if that plays up, you know, even on some of his touchdown runs, you're like, yeah, there was more space if you went to the left instead of the right, but you can go to the right and still be successful because you're so talented. So you do see a couple of those, but I think for the most part, solid vision at the very least that maybe you can coach up quickly for a month before the season and get him ready to go. There's a chance that he's involved. Like I said, well-rounded, has kind of the speed, has the cutting ability, that sort of stuff. I do think his strength, though, is the contact balance. There's plays that look kind of, honestly, like Alex Fontenot-esque, where, you know, he's kind of stumbling a little bit, but the tacklers, for some reason, just bounce off of him. It's hard to see that and project it to the next level, because a lot of the time you look at it and you say, like, it just seems like, you know, Noah Sewell up at Oregon, he probably just brings you down there. At the same time, if that bouncing off of guys bouncing off of you really does translate, well, then you really have something here to work with and probably to work with early. So I think that's going to be one of those big questions. You know, we probably won't get to see him ourselves too much in fall camp in August. But if we did, you know, is he breaking tackles here? Because if he's breaking tackles here, that's a good sign, because that's the piece that he needs to be successful this season. Along with, you know, just solid vision, which I think he already has. But, you know, if you take that up to good vision, that'd be great. Or if maybe the talent is making up for some things at the high school level that maybe you do need that to take up a bit too. But, you know, I do think that that's a well-rounded back. And again, there's going to be opportunities for Anthony Hankerson this season. I should say, so like I said, three-year starter at St. Thomas Aquinas. As a starter, he had 3,551 yards from scrimmage. About like 3,300 of those were rushing the ball, with 250 or so receiving, obviously averaging 1,200 or so yards from scrimmage. Remember, shorter seasons in high school as well. And, I mean, they're playing a national schedule, so that's pretty crazy too. 45 touchdowns as well, so averaging 15 touchdowns a year as a starter, 6.6 yards per carry, 3 fumbles in 3 seasons. We'll see. Like, he's a little bit undersized for what he likes to do. at this point. And again, he'll put a couple pounds on. There's a decent chance that, you know, that the speed turns out to be the strength, or just the shiftiness turns out to be the strength. Because you see some of that too. Like, he can make guys miss in the hole. He can run guys over a little bit. I think that a lot of that is just an understanding of angles and know when it's time. Yeah, angles is the right word. Because it's angles plus, like, the momentum of players. It's like, oh, this guy's coming this way. Oh, I can glance off him. This will be kind of a glancing blow if I just hold up a little bit or angle myself this way. Or oh, he's doing this. Well, guess what? I can take one step to the right and have him fly by. Or one step to the left, throwing a little stiff arm and sticking behind me. There is some creativity when he has the ball in his hands. You know, it seems like with some of these guys, you look at him and it's kind of like a foot race. It's like, oh, is the blocking there? It's like, oh, okay, well, here's somebody he can either juke or he can run somebody over. He's just going to run somebody over every time. You know, Hankerson has the potential to be a really good back long-term, just because he's a kind of a do-it-all guy. And in the short term, who knows how it plays out. If he can just break a couple tackles. You know, long-term, he should be a great pair for Victor Venn, who we're going to talk about soon. But those are the two true freshman running backs who are going to be on the roster this season. Again, we'll see how that all plays out. But long term, if Hankerson's kind of your every down back, and then Victor Venn's coming in on third downs, using that speed, you like the balance. You like the balance. But we'll expand on Victor Venn. We'll expand on a bunch of these guys in a second. Real quick though, Wana's fast asleep optimals are exactly what you need to help you get to bed. You know, I think a lot of people really struggle falling asleep. I think everybody goes through phases, right? Recently, I've been sleeping great. So I guess not to make you guys feel bad if you're actually interested in the set. But you can get the Wana Fast Asleep Optimals. They are 20 to 100 THC to CBD. So they're mostly CBD that helps you get to sleep. They throw a little bit of melatonin in there as well. But there is some THC. They've perfectly formulated it to help people get to sleep. It's an awesome product. You know, your eyelids will feel heavy in 5 to 15 minutes, so they work pretty quickly. They don't have all the powerful, like, sleep aid drugs sorts of stuff in there that make you feel groggy the entire next day. So definitely get your hands on those, and you can do that at Colorado's premier dispensary. That's Lightshade, with 11 convenient Denver Metro and Aurora locations. The Barnum location is now open. It's a block off of 6th and Federal. It's the biggest Lightshade store with specialty products that are not offered at other locations. They'll offer something for everyone, whether you're a casual consumer, whether you're a connoisseur. They have a premium selection of cannabis concentrates, top shelf flower, edibles, tinctures, accessories, and more. Plus, podcast listeners can get 25% off all non-sale items with the code DMVR. Shop online at lightshade.com for pickup or visit a Lightshade location near you. Also, Sexy Pizza. I tell you guys about Sexy Pizza all the time, but it really is great stuff. It's hand-tossed deck oven pizza with made-from-scratch each morning dough. You can choose your own adventure with all of their different toppings, or you can try one of their signature philanthropies. And what those are is pizzas that have been designed by different nonprofits from around Colorado. They tell you, they like put peppers on there with whatever else and whatever else. And if you buy one of the pizzas that they designed, a portion of the proceeds go to that nonprofit. So it's an awesome cause that Sexy Pizza has put together there. And you can order at www.sexy.pizza, or, you know, all the different ways that you order pizza. But they have all the different sizes. They have all the different sides. There's gluten-free options. There's vegan options. There's 4 locations in Denver, plus a new location in Trinidad, Colorado that just opened if you're down in southern Colorado. So definitely get yourself some Sexy Pizza. Finally, DraftKings Sportsbook. The NBA playoff action is nonstop at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. And this week, new customers can bet just $5 on any team to win. You'll get $150 in free bets if they do. If you're looking to turn a small bet into a big payday, then the best way to do that is through DraftKings same-game parlays. And the way that it works is you combine, you know, maybe say the Warriors are going to win. Steph is going to have 30 points. Klay is going to wind up with 3 rebounds. Combine all that, the odds obviously get better, and make yourself some money. It's a lot of fun. Plus, right now, all customers, not just new users, can place a same-game parlay with 3 or more legs. You'll get a free bet back up to $25 if one leg doesn't hit. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now. Use the promo code DMVR. Bet $5 on any NBA team to win their game. You'll get $150 in free bets if they do. That's promo code DNVR, only at DraftKings Sportsbook. Must be 21 or older, Colorado only, new customers only, minimum $5 deposit. Restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-522-4700. Okay, real quick, our DraftKings pick of the week. In honor of the Nick Saban, Jimbo Fisher drama, we're looking to the future. October 8th, they're playing a game in Tuscaloosa. Alabama's a 16.5-point favorite. We're taking Bama minus 16.5 in that game. And there's your DraftKings pick of the week. All right. So into what this backfield looks like. Now, I was running through some of the numbers from the last few years. Last season, for example, obviously, Jarek Broussard, your number one. Alex Fontenot is your number two. And from there were a bunch of guys who kind of got a few touches. It felt like it was mostly those two guys doing a bulk of the work. But when you look at the numbers, Jarek had 45% of the running back's total carries. So that doesn't factor in like Brendan Lewis running the ball or anything like that. But 45% of the time when a running back ran the ball, it was Jarek Broussard. 30% went to Fontenot. That means about 25% was split among, you know, Deion Smith. Joe Davis was out there. Ashad Clayton, you know, all those sorts of guys. Jaylee Stacks had a handful. So while it felt like, you know, Jarek Broussard, your number one, he didn't even get half the carries. Back in 2020, when he had his incredible breakout season, Alex Fontenot's hurt. I mean, it's the perfect scenario for the most possible carries. That's when Jarek had about 75% of the carries. Now, you remember, they only played 6 total games that season, including the bowl game, and so that sort of workload would not be sustainable, probably, over the course of a full-length season. You know, at 75%, at the most, he's bumping that down to 66% if they're playing 12 games, like a full season. More likely, it's closer to 60%, I think. Reason I think that, back in 2019... Alex Fontenot had about 60% of the carries when he was the bell cow. Jaron Mangum was the number two. He had, I think, maybe 25% with the other 15% split pretty evenly. Again, that's not quite as wide of a gap probably as, you know, the gap between Jarek and the others in that season, but that 60% mark is probably pretty close to what you're looking at in terms of a true bell cow back. So that's where I wanted to start, is just to say, Alex Fontenot is very easily in the driver's seat to be the starting running back. That's pretty clear at this point. You know, Deion Smith could challenge him. The freshmen, if they come in and break out, they'll get opportunities. Tough to see them starting week one, though. Although, you know, if something crazy happens, they could definitely take that job during the season. It does seem like right now, though, you probably get 1-5 odds on Alex Fontenot being the starter. You know, bet $5. I'll give you a dollar if you're right. So that's where we start. I kind of alluded to this a little bit before, but I think the big question is, what does that mean in terms of the carries? You know, does that mean he's back at that 60% mark from 2019? Honestly, that's kind of where I'm leaning. That might creep up to 65%. I don't think it gets any higher than that, though, unless something crazy happens. You know, if TCU comes up to Boulder week one, Alex has 20 carries for 200 yards and a couple touchdowns. Maybe you do see him creep up close to that 70% mark. But I think it's almost impossible for a back to get over that rate, which means at least 30% and probably closer to 40% and maybe even 50%. Is going to be split among the rest of these running backs. And it's really hard to predict what that split will look like. I do think that Deion Smith has a firm grasp on the number two job, similar to Alex Fontenot's grasp on the number one job. I think he's probably just as in control right there. Now, it's the same thing where Anthony Hankerson gets 5 carries in week one and winds up putting up 55 yards on him. Well, maybe you give him a couple more touches the next week, and if that goes well, maybe he does wind up being your number two. But to start the season, Deion Smith, like Alex Fontenot, very much in control of the spot that he's in. For Deion to hold on to that role, you need to see... That's a tough question. That's a tough question. What do you need to see from Deion? First of all, what's he good at? You know, he's really good at those stretch runs. He's very fast. That's his very clear strength, I think, at this point, is his just top-end speed. I think that while that's the case, we have seen him run physically. Like, he's definitely not contact shy. He will fall forward fairly often, I think, just because of the style of runner. Now, it's the style of run that can get you in some injury trouble, that sort of stuff. Well, knock on wood as we say it. But, you know, in the spring game, there was the play where I think they lined up at the one-yard line and just ran the ball to the A-gap, ran right over a linebacker. Big pop, and carried him into the end zone. Actually, I think they might not have called that touchdown, but definitely was. Something weird happened. Now I'm struggling to remember. But, yeah, I mean, he does have that. He has some pop. You know, it's not, I don't think you can call it power. He has some pop. It might just be the shiftiness that's kind of missing right now. And the vision could tick up as well. I think that if the vision and in particular the processing time with that vision. You know, I don't think he's making bad decisions as much as you'd like to see him make those decisions a little bit more quickly. So there's kind of a quick evaluation of where Deion's at right now. Upside is a pass catcher, I should say, as well. We haven't seen all that much of it, but I do think that is something that should be an important part of his game, honestly. We'll see how that plays out as well. So there's your real quick overview on Deion. In this new system, we don't know exactly what it will look like because Mike Sanford has worked in so many different systems. I still think it leans a little bit pro style. It leans toward the West Coast offense. And because of that leaning, you wind up right now when you're running those West Coast offenses, it a lot of it is based on, you know, West Coast passing system, but then the outside zone runs, the wide zone runs. And so I really think that we're going to be seeing more of that this season. I think we might have even heard that from coaches at one or two points in this spring. So, Deion fits that really well, the wide zone running. With the idea being you attack the edge of the defense, you attack the outside hip of your offensive tackle, and first of all, you try to beat him to that edge. If you beat him to the edge, well, there you go, you're off and running. If you can make them overcommit to the outside, that's what opens up the cutback lanes. So, I do think that at a base level, Deion's traits fit this scheme probably a little bit better than what they were doing before. Now, the other piece of that, though, is that you have to recognize that hole has come open, that cutback lane has come open, and you have to take advantage. And you have to cut quickly and get up there. First of all, read it quickly, cut quickly, and then you're off and running. Can he make that quick cut? Can he make that quick read? If he does those two things, then he could be in position for a breakout season. You know, like I said, you're pretty clear number two back. Alex Fontenot's taking, let's say, 60% of the carries. Deion's going to get the first try to take up that whole 40% of the carries. You know, if it winds up being 60 for Fontenot, then it probably winds up being 30 for Deion week one with a couple scattered about the rest of the guys, see if anybody pops there so you can justify. But, you know, he gets his first chance to stake that claim to that remainder that's left over from Alex. And because of that, you know, he has the opportunity. He has some traits that you like. It could be time for a breakout junior season for Deion. So there's an overview of his situation. You know, Jaylee Stacks is next up. How does he fit in? I mean, obviously he's best at fullback. That is why you have him on the roster at this point, is because he can line up at fullback and hit guys and open holes, and also be kind of a utility piece working out of the backfield as a pass catcher as well. So you like that. I believe that Yeah, Darian Hagan, I think, said he can carry the ball. Like he can play as a tailback. And while it didn't seem like he was going to get many reps, you know, it's just pure single back reps, now that Ramon Jefferson is gone, I think he will get some. And I think that they're going to really open things up early in the season. I think that a bunch of these guys are going to get opportunities, and then the rotation kind of gets whittled down from that point as you start to see what's working and what's not. But I think that when you look at these running backs, who do you want out there when, you know, again, just a single back, like under center, handoff, whatever, out of pistol, whatever. I think Jaylee Stacks is probably third on that list as of right now. And again, he could pop. You know, he's not a fun guy to tackle. And, you know, we talk about Ramon Jefferson. Some of the value that he adds is that if the offensive line screws a play up, it might work out just fine. You know, Jaylee Stacks has some of that tackle-breaking ability that I don't think it's on Ramon Jefferson's level. And I don't think he has the quickness if he gets hit in the backfield to, oh, break this tackle, and then we're gone and we can hit a lane. But, you know, if he does, well, then all of a sudden he could also be a very good fit for what the Buffs are trying to do. More likely, I think, is that he gets carries out of the shotgun. I think we've seen a little bit of growth from Alex Fontenot in terms of receiving out of the backfield. He wound up with 122 receiving yards when he was the bell cow in 2019. He also missed a game that season, so it's more than 10 yards per game receiving. It's more like 11 or 12. I mean, not that that's a huge difference, but I do think that he has grown in that regard. Still not a receiving threat, and I think what you really like is his ability to carry the ball between the tackles. And because of that, if you're managing the workload, if this does turn out to be a situation where you say, hey, Alex is our best back, if we could play him every snap and not have to worry about him getting hurt or wearing down late in the season or whatever, then we would do that. If that's how the coaches see it, instead of, oh, we got some good guys, they're all about the same, we'll throw them out there, they do their different things, but in terms of who's most valuable, it could be any of them. Then maybe not, but if he does turn out to be kind of your clear best back, you're not going to use him to do things that he's not his best at, right? Like, you're using him in single back and then subbing him out. And that's why I think that Jaylee has a good chance to be that shotgun back, as does Deion Smith. You know, Deion has that speed, which as a receiver is very valuable. But Jaylee can obviously pass protect. He can catch the ball. He can make guys miss after he catches the ball. And so I do think that he's going to get a surprising number of carries out of the shotgun. It'll be more than you'd expect. So there's Jaylee. From there, you go to the two freshmen. You know, we talked about Hankerson before. Victor Venn is the other. He's rated just a tiny bit behind Hankerson, but not all that much. Rivals really likes him. I think Rivals has him as the number 19 back in his recruiting class compared to, like, I think the 24/7 Sports has him like 60 or something like that. So there's some hype there. You know, he's a pretty pure speed guy, which again, like in this scheme, can work. You need to have the vision, which I think he probably showed on tape. I think it's fair to say he has good vision. If we're comparing, I'd probably put it ahead of Hankerson. Obviously receiving ability as that little speed guy can make guys miss. He can make guys miss, but I'm a little bit worried about whether he can make guys miss immediately at Colorado. I think long-term he's going to be just fine. You know, I'm not sure he winds up being an ankle breaker. I think that it's always going to be his speed that stands out. But there might be a little bit of that as well. Does that translate early on? Does the vision translate early on? How fast does he look when he's going up against Power 5 defenders? And does he... There's two parts of being an undersized back. And I think he's listed right now as... He's listed 5'10", 175. 5'8", 165, 170 might be more realistic. But I don't know. I haven't seen him in a bit. As a smaller back, there's two pieces to making that work. You know, first of all, does your body hold up? You know, can you be tackled between the tackles and still be good to go, still be just as fresh, still be capable of doing your job to your best ability after taking a couple hits from linebackers who could be close to twice your size? So that's a part of it. The other part is the mental aspect, right? You know, knowing that you're that much smaller, knowing that you're running between the tackles at defensive linemen and linemen who could just wallop you. And again, he totally had that mental side in high school, but doing that at the Power 5 level is different. So you need to see him be pretty fearless. You know, I think that Deion has come a long way in terms of just being fearless. Like, he will run head on into somebody much bigger than him, even if it doesn't seem like good things will happen. You know, does Victor Venn have that? Because we know that he's not going to win many of those matchups. You know, he's not much of a tackle breaker. He has a little bit of shiftiness. He can make guys miss a little bit. And you hope that that either translates or ticks up a bit over his time in Boulder. But it'd be tough to believe that he's going to be a real tackle breaker at Colorado. And again, that's what makes him and Hankerson kind of a nice pair down the road, because Hankerson can do all the work between the tackles. He can make guys miss, and he can break tackles. Guys just seem to fall off him. He has a good vision. He makes things work, and he has the versatility to keep you honest, too. He can stretch the edge. He can catch the ball a little bit out of the backfield. There you go. Third downs, though, throw in Victor Venn. Let him run out of shotgun. When you have some bigger running lanes, some zone run out of shotgun, outside zone run out of shotgun, he should be great. And then also catch the ball a little bit. I think if you let him catch the ball a little bit out of the backfield, there you go. And so that pairing makes a lot of sense. For this season, you have a couple questions. You know, first of all, what kind of back do you wind up needing? You know, if Alex Fontenot is your number one, you're probably looking for a third down back. You know, and because of that, does that give Victor Venn a bit of an edge? Potentially. Hankerson, again, though, might just be more physically prepared to play at this level immediately. I think both will get opportunities, and we'll just have to watch and see how that all plays out. But what is needed, and then also just who is ready? Those are the two pieces here. So to kind of answer the whole question, what does this backfield look like? Oh, and I should say, hey, you do have Noah Hubbard and Charlie Offerdahl. There's a couple guys who could wind up factoring in as walk-ons. You know, Charlie Offerdahl had a great, great spring game, just like he did last year when he should have been going to prom. I think. Yeah, that's right. That's definitely right. I think that's right. But a little undersized, still pretty quick, definitely fearless, can break a tackle, can be a little shifty because of that fearlessness. I think that kind of opens him up a little bit. No, he's not playing scared. He's not focused on, oh no, am I going to get hit? He's focused on how do I get by this guy? And when you're an undersized back, that's a big part of it. You know, ask Phil Lindsay about that. You know, yes, he has other traits that are good. You know, the shiftiness is good. The burst is really good. He can break some tackles as well. He has great contact balance. None of that matters if he doesn't play as downhill as he does. You know, that's what makes all that stuff work. And Charlie Offerdahl does have that mental side of the game figured out. It's just, can an undersized running back be that productive? And I bet I wouldn't be surprised if at some point this season he gets some touches. I think that if you see a blowout in one of these first few games, you're gonna see Charlie Offerdahl get a touch or there, touch or two in there. So I'll say that as well. My prediction for the rotation and the way I thought of it was this: these are numbers that are kind of averaged across the course of the season. You know, it's not game by game, what does it look like, but just like in general, what does it look like? And assuming everybody's healthy and assuming like you're not like taking out garbage time, taking out when you throw a Charlie Offerdahl out there just to see what happens, but just what in this base form does this rotation look like? I think Alex Fontenot gets about 55% of the carries. That might be a little bit low considering it was at 60% in 2019. But I do think just the way that this backfield is built, there's plenty of guys you want to get touches to. And maybe it's a little bit optimistic since we're talking over the course of the season. You know, when we say, like, you want to get Victor Venn touches. Yes, you absolutely do. But by week three, you're going to know a lot more about Victor Venn than you do now. And you might not still want to be giving him touches. You know, so I do think that long term, this might be a bit optimistic, but we're going with it. Alex Fontenot at 55%, Deion Smith at 25%. I figured that was a good number. I think that's pretty similar to what Jaron Mangum got when Alex Fontenot was the bell cow in 2019. That's kind of what I based that off of. Again, if he plays really well, that number's easily going up to 30% to 40% even. But I'm going with 25. Feels like a pretty middle of the road answer, which is what I was going for. Jaylee Stacks, I'm at 10% of the carries, and that's probably where I went a little bit bold. You know, it might make more sense to make that 5% and give another 5% to Alex Fontenot, but I'm bullish on Jaylee Stacks right now. I have 5% each from Victor Venn and Anthony Hankerson. You know, it, what does that mean? That means if you run the ball 40 times in a game, they're each getting two of them. Yeah, that's right. It's like, yeah, I think that over the course of the season that balances out. Now, I think it's more likely Victor Venn gets four than they each get two. But the next week, probably Anthony Hankerson getting four. So over the course of the season, it kind of balances out. So that's where I'm at. 55% for Fontenot, 25% for Deion Smith, 10% for Jaylee Stacks, 5% each for Victor Venn and Anthony Hankerson, with Charlie Offerdahl probably getting a couple touches late in games that are already decided, to see if he pops. And obviously here I bet on him not popping because, you know, I mean, he's a walk-on. There's other options. However, betting against walk-ons always kind of feels just a little bit scary, you know? Because then you know, is that clip going to be looked at 3 years ago totally differently? Who knows? There's some upside there for sure. Real quick, is there a chance they bring in a transfer and that changes everything? I think there's definitely a chance. I think that there's definitely a chance. They do have that one scholarship left open that could be going to somebody currently on the team. Honestly, that'd probably be... I think it's 50-50. That's all I'll say. I think it's 50-50 that scholarship goes to a walk-on currently on the team. Or it goes to a player. Now, if they give it to somebody in the portal, I think that there's maybe let's go 60% chance it's a defensive back, 20% chance it's offensive line, 20% chance it's a running back. I think that's where we stand. And the reason why I'm struggling with the running back is just because there's kind of like surprisingly few of them available. I mean, I guess you could go through and find options. But, I mean, obviously if you're Colorado, what you're looking for is somebody who can play right now. And ideally somebody who, like Ramon Jefferson, could play this season and then be gone, and you wind up with an open scholarship for next year, and you can kind of move along to this next group of guys. And, you know, if nobody pops, if you want more, then you add somebody else from the portal next year. I think that'd probably be the best option. You're not looking for somebody that's like, oh, yeah, he didn't really play all that much, but, you know, maybe we could unlock him, because you have potential. You have unproven guys around. And because of that, there aren't a lot of options who are proven. You know, there's a guy from BYU who was kind of a rotational guy there. Andrew Van Buren from Boise State, like, he's a big power back. He's like 250 pounds and got a bunch of their goal line work. Like, maybe you could see the value there, but with one scholarship left, I'm not sure that's the answer. There aren't a lot of proven backs, guys who have experience, which is what's lacking. And that's why I don't think they add a running back. I don't think they add a running back. Although, I mean, they're definitely in a situation where you have to have the conversation, right? Are we ready to go into this season? Well, knock on wood for saying this, but what happens if Alex Fontenot gets hurt? know, say you're missing him for just one game. Are you happy going into a game with Deion Smith, Jaylee Stacks, the freshman, Charlie Offerdahl? I mean, you're asking a lot of the running backs this season, would be our guess in terms of how the offense is kind of structured and what could go right. So there's a concern there. I think there has to be a concern there. You know, this isn't an elite running back group for sure. You know, I haven't looked too deeply into the depth of other Pac-12 running back rooms. I'd have to guess, though, that Colorado's a bottom four running back room, bottom three running back room. Again, for a team that struggled the way that it did passing the football last year, that's concerning. Now, again, Victor Venn breaks out, Anthony Hankerson breaks out, Deion Smith breaks out. All of a sudden, the picture can change very quickly. This is now a massive question mark, right? Whereas before, it felt like the running back rotation was pretty much settled. Like Ramon Jefferson, Alex Fontenot, either one could be the starter, but they're both probably picking up about 40% of the carries and 20% getting split between Deion and Jaylee, and maybe beyond there, a couple guys get reps. Now the competition for the number two running back job, that's big. And the number three running back job is even wider. I mean, there's a lot of opportunities. And to be totally honest, the most fun thing to happen would be Victor Venn or Anthony Hankerson putting up some big numbers, winning the starting job and making a name for themselves late in the season. And if that's what happens, all of a sudden you feel like you have an identity for the next couple of years. You know, if say Anthony Hankerson is a 1,000-yard rusher this season, which, again, if you were trying to make that bet, you'd get pretty good odds on it. Then you go into next season saying, okay, we got Hankerson. Now can we build around that? You know, so we'll see. I do think that this is going to be a fun group to watch. It's going to be interesting. I think there's a lot of guys who are really easy to root for. But what it's going to look like, it's up in the air. And I don't even think the coaches know as of right now. I think there's our update on the running back situation after Ramon Jefferson transfers out. We learn from Justin Guerrero of Rivals, of CU Sports Nation, that Anthony Hankerson is going to be on campus this summer. Whew. We'll see. We needed more drama. We were short on drama. So this is a ideal world we're living in. That's going to do it for today. Go Avs. And don't watch Ramon Jefferson highlights. They'll just make you sad. I'll see you guys on Monday.